So Afghanistan, can you talk a little bit about here in the United States, how have we run parallel with this people that we're destroying?
Absolutely. I think it's unfortunately very concrete parallels. For instance, there are technologies that the Defense Department and military contractors have developed for battlefield application in Afghanistan, particularly biometric collection, data collection, I should say. So, you know, the process through which the military can, for instance, identify people from their retinal patterns or iris patterns, or even the patterns of veins on the back of your hand, or even advanced surveillance camera technology that can detect patterns across facial attributes to actually identify people based on nothing more than footage of many people, say, on the street. These battlefield technologies that were developed for a foreign theater and the military are increasingly finding their way onto an American street in the hands of local police departments who have increasingly been getting Homeland Security grants, whether from the federal government or their state governments, to...
So what would be a solution? Do you see solutions?
Accountability of the chain of command is one piece. I think the second solution, and this is one of the things I'll be talking about tomorrow as well as on Monday, are the needs for grassroots movements like the peace movement, like the Occupy Portland movement, like the immigrant rights movement, to join together at the local and state level to politicize the metastasis of government surveillance. Many of the very same programs and policies that marginalize immigrants, particularly the Secure Communities Initiative, are also surveillance programs applicable not just to immigrants, but all Americans. And all Americans share an interest in the liberty and the privacy that have enabled the robust civic society, the discourse that we're very proud of as a nation. And I think the key, while we still have the vestige of First Amendment rights that remain, is to use what little we have left to ensure not only that those freedoms don't diminish anymore, but also that we keep these battlefield technologies, that we keep these surveillance practices out of our towns and our cities. There's a particular connection in Portland where the city just recently allowed the Portland Police Department to once again participate in the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force after years of declaring that the Portland Police Department would not be allowed to participate in those federally coordinated efforts.
Anything you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Maybe just two pieces. One, you can read more about these issues at any point at www.bordc, Bill of Rights Defense Committee, bordc.org. We have a blog where we pull news reports every day, and you can stay up to date on the latest news in civil liberties and the rule of law. And also just that I'm so excited to see the energy behind Occupy Portland and the local peace movement, and I'm really excited to see you all on the ground.
Thanks again for that. My guest has been Shahid Buttar. He is the director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee.
I just I want to support my kids, my grandkids, get them thinking the right, at what I consider the right way about other people instead of, you know, wealth and possessions. Unfortunately, things seem to be really under control by the wrong people, and they're going to not want to relinquish that control. And they seem to have might be on their side, like the police and the military. I mean, I'm not a really religious guy, but if I were, I would think Jesus would be out marching here too.
I feel like people are finally speaking out. I've been upset and dismayed by the apathy that is prevalent among the 99% on issues that should have been dealt with. I've always identified myself as a Democrat. However, I feel like even the Democratic Party is selling us out. We've made too many concessions to big business, to corporations. We have a for-profit healthcare system that obviously is not working. Been on the receiving end of that. I have over $70,000 worth of student loans. And yeah, I got a great education, but I feel like that's something that I'll never escape, that debt. You can't declare bankruptcy and wipe it out. It follows you everywhere, so it's kind of a debtor's prison. But I had to work really hard to get myself through school. I was a single mom. I have two children. I got pregnant when I was 18 years old, and I'll always have that debt against me. There's millions of Americans that are in the same boat with me. That's just one thing, you know, one thing in our society where we are taught to accumulate debt.
My name is Alex. I'm working with the info booth. We're helping coordinate kind of all the logistics and trying to be a central hub for the organization of the place. It's just so many people have come and offered all kinds of support. There's people that offer their services, their goods, their kitchens, their showers. People that just come and want to talk. Someone just came and gave me a hug today and just said, I love what you're doing, and left. So just little things that make you realize that it's a huge thing, and there's so many people that are involved, and it's just really inspiring working behind the info booth, getting to meet all these people and see all these faces, from people that have tiny kids to people that are 60 years old. It's really inspiring. So I definitely suggest anybody listening, come down here, check out our website, occupyportland.org. There's many ways you can help.
I'm Chris, and I'm working with Food Committee, trying to help organize our kitchen and make sure everything, all the food that's going out is safe and healthy, making sure that, as well as humans, pets are getting fed. So far, we've not had any health issues with anything as far as people getting sick or anything like that. We follow all of Multnomah County's health code laws, as well as Safe Surf laws, which is a national standard, which is much higher than any other local area food handler's card. So we're making sure people have good, safe, hot, nutritious, dense food.
I am part of the food team, and we feed thousands of people a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We have campers, and we're also feeding some of our vulnerable members of society who don't have somewhere else to eat. Right now, we have a big need in taking away compost. We have a lot of compost built up, so we're asking actually if maybe some KBOO listeners would like to come down and maybe grab a bag of compost and take it home and compost it with them. We have food separated out into compost bags. If they could just come and take a bag home and bring it to their home compost, that would be a way for folks to help at home who aren't camping.
I'm speaking now with Calvin Hekokta, who is with the American Indian Movement. Calvin, what brings you to Occupy Portland, to the encampment?
The reason I came to the encampment is the spirit. There's a powerful spirit of movement here, and one of the things that I always look at is that in our world today, there is a power called spiritual death that has occurred to this nation. And the Occupy Wall Street that has brought people alive, the spirit of the people is moving now. And that is wonderful. I want to see it continue to grow. And meeting with the young people here that have that spirit of movement, and it's spreading so quickly, that gives me hope, a powerful sense of hope that the rest of the country will wake up to understand that they are being used and abused and being lied to by their representatives in the government. So that's why I'm here, and hopefully I'll get the opportunity to speak to the group here at some point and let them know my appreciation for what they're doing. And I've been at the camp in Eugene and in Salem, and lending them my support. So that's why I'm here, just to meet with all the different people, and I love it.
What do you think are some of the things that this movement can learn from the indigenous community and indigenous elders in the U.S.?
One of the things that we do have to take a look at is what my grandfather and others used to tell me is, you have to understand and learn about everything that's going on around you. You have to pay attention to everything. Pay attention to the earth, the wind, the people, and know what their actions are, so that you can make some decisions on how you're going to fit into the world and be productive. So that's what I hope that will take place. And like I said before, is learning how to wake the people and make this occupation and protest a positive movement.
What do you think about the focus on greed and this idea that that greed is not an acceptable thing in a society?
I place that on the top of the list. If it wasn't for that, we would still have our forests intact, that there would be no clear cutting and destruction of the forest lands and the destruction of our habitats and the destruction of our waters and air. If it wasn't for greed, we would have all of these things intact.
Well, it's a long history that that this country will have to recover from. What kind of a timeline do you think we're looking at in order to make these changes?
I feel right now that we will probably look at about 2 to 3 more years before our movement will really make an effect across the whole country and around the world, that that all of us, the working people and the homeless people and all of us, that will come together and make that change. And that is probably 3 to 4 years or so. And the nation really hits bottom, and that will make the rest of the country wake up, that they have been lied to and conned out of everything that they own and everything that they hold dear. And then they can really see what this movement is about.
What do you think are some of the main messages of the Occupy Wall Street movement?
The main messages would be that the people that are doing the occupying are looking at the people that have the wealth, that are taking the top, taking our tax dollars, and using it for their own selves, their own greed. And I think that one of the things that we look at is that...
Hey, this is Anna Preble talking to you from KBOO. KBOO's booth at the Occupy Portland camp in downtown Portland, and I'm having a chat here with, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm John Haley.
Hey, John.
I live out in Happy Valley, Oregon, by the Clackamas Town Center. I'm down here at the, Occupy Wall Street demonstration in Portland. And my comment is that this is not the first time that the government has run the economy into the ground, where there have been problems with the banking system. It was not that many years ago when all the savings and loans banks, the state chartered banks in the country, literally went out of business because of inaction by the Congress.
And is that, well, what drew you here today to downtown Portland, to this camp here? Did you just kind of want to come and see for yourself, or do you want to describe to us what brought you here? Why you felt, even though what's brought us to this moment may be the banks, what brought you physically here to the camp?
Well, I believe that the country has been on the wrong track for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And that a day of reckoning, I believe, is coming, and sooner than later. And I wanted to see the campsites here in the parks and all that, because I know it's just a matter of time before the authorities, for lack of a better word, move in and for whatever reasons terminate it. And I wanted to be at least, you know, see part of this, because I think that change is needed in the country, and whether that change is going to come from the top down, from the elected officials and leaders, civic leaders, business leaders and like, or it's going to have to come from the bottom up, places, people like this here. And clearly the change is not coming from the top down. So this could well be the start of much needed change that's going to come about in this country one way or another.
Sorry, a little bit of technical adjustment there. So what do you think out in, or do you see these same issues in your community in Happy Valley?
Where I'm located, the standard of living is much higher. I'm in an area near the Clackamas Town Center, and I guess that if a person was looking for a job that lived in that area, he would have a choice of which job to take rather than saying to himself, what could I do? I realize that if I lived in downtown Portland, despite my degree and business experience, there simply are no jobs available for me. I would have to move out of the state. And I have seen that that has been a problem that Oregon has had, is where individuals that are getting good degrees and have good work experience and all simply are having to move in order to find any type of decent employment. And it's a shame, and I think that what I'm seeing happening here in Portland, I think is happening nationwide. I'm not critical of our civic and local state leaders, because I think that they face the same problems that many states do. I think California is the best example of a failed state. And we're a long ways from where California's at.
What are you thinking that you might be involved? You might get involved in any of the activities around here that are or attend any of the workshops? Are you interested in any of those facilities that they've set up here on the camp?
I am not familiar with what is available here at the camp. I wouldn't presume that I would have anything to offer. I think that this is something that each individual has to come to a decision on his own. And I don't think I would have that much to offer in that way. I am going to look at some of the different workshops that they have down here. I'll come to a conclusion at that time.
So, wait, did you just get here a little while ago then?
Yeah, I've been here maybe 10 minutes. I was just walking around. Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming to talk to us so quickly after getting here. I would say, honestly, and my opinions aside, from what I've been hearing from other people around who are from, you know, what they would describe as a middle-class community, are saying that there is actually a place here for everyone. So, it sounds like the information tent is a good place to start to find out what's going on. So,
yep. I appreciate talking with you.
Thank you for talking to us.
I guess I'm gonna volunteer that I have worked for a congressman before in a campaign office, and I'm of the opinion that neither party is effectively governing. Do vote, but make up your own mind. Be an individual.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
We do have Josh now. And Josh, thanks for joining us. What brings you out here?
Well, I am a 22-year-old. I guess I'm expected to be here, kind of.
Well, there's plenty of 22-year-olds that are sitting in front of their TVs right now.
No, definitely. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek. Well, originally, I'm from New York. I'm a New Yorker. And it's really inspiring for me to hear what they were doing on Wall Street. And I wish I could be there. But due to the economic downturn, I can't pay for a plane ticket to go back. So this is kind of like the closest I can get. But also, I like to say a quote from, you know, Billie Holiday's song, Army Corps of Engineers. The difficult we will do right now, the impossible might take a little while. This is the difficult part, learning how to come together as a community, learning how to work inside of this instead of, you know, the individualistic, globalized kind of way that we've been living. And I think it's very interesting to see all the different people that are here coming together, not necessarily for any certain topic, but just for the fact that we see that this is not the way that we can do it. That we shouldn't be living in the way that we've been living for the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years. That there needs to be a change, not only in the logistical things of government and economy and just all those things, but also in our mindsets on how we live towards each other and how we work together to make things happen. And unity has been kind of the thing that I've been pushing the most among the people here, just to remember that we are all inherently interconnected, and the goodness of somebody else is forever relying upon the goodness of you.
Is this the village of the future then in some ways?
I mean, obviously, logistically, we have technology that's going to help us. I believe personally that we, you know, community radio. Community is the most essential part of human living, I believe. It's where you know the most about what you need. It's where you can work within the system of goodness to make things happen. I don't necessarily believe that we will be living in tents cooking our food next to a statue for the rest of eternity, but I do believe that we can use, I mean, inherently technology isn't bad. It's actually very, very good when it's used for the interests of the greedy and the people who just want to assume power. Then it starts to take a negative turn. But if we can use those things, like you guys have on this table right here, for goodness, then, you know, we can have houses where many, many people can live in a very, very efficient way that isn't taking up too much energy, and they can grow their own food and not have to worry about going to a supermarket to pay for more expensive fresh produce because the government subsidizes the cheap food, you know? So yes, in one sense, it is the way of the future, but Tent City, I don't think, is the most efficient and practical way to live.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to think about how this can be applied, or this model can be applied to the larger society. How do you think change like this can be possible when you've got 257 millionaires in Congress that are supposedly representing us?
Well, you always have to have a certain sense of forgiveness. You always have to know that somebody might do wrong, but you doing everything you can to punish them for it is just as wrong as what they did. And I really believe that obviously money has to be taken out of politics. And that goes back to the localization. If we had voter-owned elections and instant runoff voting, I don't think that politics would be infringed upon by, you know, mega conglomerate lobbying groups that just continually do for the public interest instead of for the public good. I mean, do for the special interest instead of
their
for
own
the public
interest.
Exactly.
the interest of profit.
Yes, the interest of profit, which is a funny term, because when we think about profit, for me, the things that are profitable are the things that make us all happy, the things that we inherently need, like food, water, clean air, open spaces, which is something that the modern day profit that we think of, it doesn't really allow for those things to be had. I mean, you know, look at big agribusiness. It's like they take one of the most essential things for human living and change it into something that can actually hurt the public.
So it's maybe the gross national happiness index.
Yes,
like they,
that would be awesome.
Having Bhutan is something that we could consider adopting. And
yeah. And it's funny, we have such a negative connotation towards Cuba. In the mainstream, a lot of people have a negative connotation towards Cuba, but somebody was telling me before that the national, like, index for how happy people are is much, much higher than America or the United States.
Actually, yeah, I think the U.S. is pretty low on the list.
Yes.
Number one, as I remember, is Costa Rica. So,
Who can blame them? They have beautiful weather.
Well, thanks so much, Josh.
Beautiful words. Thank you, guys.
What brings you out here today?
Oh, I'm out here with my kids, my grandkids.
And what issues are you hoping to address?
Well, the same. I mean, most of the songs I see, I'm all with that, really. You know, corporate greed, of course, and Wall Street and all that. But
I want to support my kids, my grandkids, get them thinking the right, what I consider the right way about other people instead of, you know, wealth and possessions and things like that.
Well, what kind of a future do you think we're creating for our future generations right now?
Well, I try to stay optimistic, but unfortunately, things seem to be really under control by the wrong people, and they're going to not want to relinquish that control, and they seem to have might be on their side, like the police and the military and stuff like that. So just give it our best shot and do the best we can.
What do you think it's going to take to change things?
Wow. I think what we're doing right now as far as getting the people throughout the whole world, apparently, excited and wanting to do what they feel is the right thing for their fellow man. I mean, I'm not a really religious guy, but if I were, I would think Jesus would be out marching here too. Yeah.
And what do you hope that this march today accomplishes?
Well, more solidarity, get more people involved, because I mean, the more the merrier. I mean, seriously.
Is this your first time to the encampment here?
No, I've been here since. Well, I don't stay here, but I visit because. One of my friends, Wes, he's with the Media Center, and there's my daughter. She and her kids, my grandkids, are really involved. Hey, it's good talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care.
Can you talk about why populist protests like Occupy Wall Street have failed in the past?
Basically, what happens is that these movements tend to get co-opted by organizations that are already in power. A lot of times, you'll get legislation passed as a result of a populist movement, and that legislation is greatly watered down by corporate lobbying or mainstream political parties basically putting in loopholes for their constituents or people who are funding their campaigns. So what you end up with is the populist movement may think that it's accomplished something, but when you actually look at the legislation, it's actually much less effective than what's really needed. And that's one of the reasons why, despite all kinds of concerns over things like the environment over the last 40 years, we're basically in a situation where we have this, where the environment is much worse, we have much worse climate change issues, and we have a huge wealth gap.
And so do you think there's similar danger in the Occupy movement being co-opted into the mainstream progressive institutions similarly?
I think it's possible if they're not careful. I just happened to see a headline today that said Obama plans to use some of the messaging from the Occupy movement. I think that's the sort of thing that we'll start to see happen. And what the Occupy movement and people who are concerned about the wealth gap need to understand is that, you know, our democratic two-party system is basically corrupted now and colonized by corporate money. And that change isn't really going to happen by just trying to patch those systems. We need fundamental structural changes. And I mean, initially, a lot of people talk about taking away corporate personhood rights, but it's actually more complex than that. There's over 150 years of law in this country that gives corporations powers to overturn what communities want. And so we have to not just strip corporations of personhood rights, but we also have to take away their rights under the Contracts and Commerce Clause of the Constitution. And we also have to change the way federal and state preemption works. Those are kinds of rules that allow the state government to come in and overrule what a local community might want in their own town.
Okay. Can you elaborate on some of the movements that have been successful? You touch on a few in the article.
Yeah. So in Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh City Council passed an ordinance that was drafted with help of Thomas Lindsay's group, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And what that ordinance does is it bans fracking in the Pittsburgh city limits. And fracking is this harmful, environmentally harmful form of natural gas drilling. But it not only bans fracking, it also strips any corporations that try to do fracking of their constitutional rights and their Contracts and Commerce Clause protections and their right and their preemption rights. And so it's basically setting up a battle for corporations to come and try to drill and try to overrule what the residents of Pittsburgh have said now, which is that they don't want fracking in their city. And as a result of this ordinance, so far, no one has tried to drill or start a well in Pittsburgh.
And so you advocate for localizing the Occupy movement so that they affect structural change at the municipal level. Do you think that local structural change could ultimately disturb federal frameworks?
I think the Occupy movement is evolving very quickly, and I don't pretend to tell them what to do. But I do think that just attempting to occupy space isn't really a long-term plan. And I do think, especially with winter coming and people will just get tired and fatigued of this, that it's really important to have clear messaging and a clear vision of what you want to accomplish. And I do think at some point that these different local Occupy movements need to push for change in their communities. And what we are suggesting is that this probably can take the form of drafting bills of rights in their communities that lay out their demands, which one of the things the Occupy movement has pushed for is stripping corporations of these sort of judge-made constitutional rights like personhood and contracts and commerce clause rights and things like that.
Can you tell me about the Spokane initiative?
Yeah, certainly. So the residents of Spokane, working through about 25 different community organizations, have come up with four planks to a Bill of Rights initiative that's on their November ballot this year. And it's actually the second time that they've run an initiative. They ran one unsuccessfully 2 years ago, but they've worked to build more support and are running it on this year's ballot. So basically what their new initiative proposes is, one, it strips corporations of their personhood rights and some of the benefits that they've received from legacy federal court decisions. It also provides rights for nature to protect the Spokane River and the Spokane Aquifer, which are essential environmental components of the community there. It also provides constitutional workplace protections to employees in the workplace. And so this includes things like the rights to collective bargaining that were at issue in Wisconsin this year. It also provides the rights for neighborhoods to make the final decisions about development in their community, because often zoning laws overturn what actual residents and neighbors want.
Great. Thank you, Jeff.
Sure.
I've been speaking with Jeff Reifman, the co-founder of Envision Seattle. This is Zoe Carpenter with KBOO News.
Okay. Hello. Could you please tell me who you are, your name, and what committee you're with?
I'm Marla, and I am in the food committee. I cook, I clean, I serve.
How big is your committee here?
Oh, that's a good question. We've got like a basic core committee, like, I don't know, 5-10 people, and then we get volunteers from all over the camp to come in and help us get stuff done.
Perfect. And how long have you been with the committee?
I have been working on the food committee off and on since Saturday, but I've really been working steady in the last 3 days. Yeah.
So at this point, what are some of the needs of your committee, of the food camp?
Right now, we could really, really use some propane. We need gluten-free food alternatives because we're really low on those. Bulk food that is non-perishable would be awesome, like grains, rice, beans, stuff like that. A cart, like a bicycle cart, so we can get food out to the other camps would be awesome. And also, we have a decently high demand for meat products. So if you have food you want to donate that's pre-cooked, meat would be awesome.
Speaking with sanitation earlier, they were hoping to stress donations come down unprepackaged to reduce some of the waste that's in camp. Is there a way, would you try to promote that as well, if people can bring stuff down and that's not packaged that would add to the trash amount here?
Yes, if you could, bulk food is better. But by prepackaged, I'm pretty sure they probably meant like the smaller containers, like the prepackaged dinner, stuff like that. That's awesome. It's good. It's something we can hand out and don't have to worry about sanitation, but it also produces a lot of waste. So it's better to have bulk food that we can prepare here in our pots that aren't going to get tossed to avoid trash.
And personally speaking, why are you here? Why are you putting out your free time and effort?
Because I have seen so much suffering because of the lack of jobs, because of the fact that the jobs that people do have don't pay well enough. I've met dozens of people today alone who have been looking for months for jobs and can't find them. I have a job. I'm still here because I want to speak for the people.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Joe Lino with KBOO News. So why are you personally donating so much time and effort in making this work? Why are you down here?
I'm down here because I love food. I want to make sure people are happy and healthy. I think food is the first line of defense for medicine and health.
You can do that anywhere, so why are you doing it here at Occupy Portland?
The need was great. I work with Food Not Bombs when I'm not doing NIST, which is the nonprofit organization that provides food for the needy that is donated. All the food is donated from local farmers markets that can't be sold. So, and we're also going to set up a Food Not Bombs station on the in the other camp that we have, so that they can have their service as well, and hopefully have another kitchen going that's all vegan, so that health and safety issues can be addressed with there as well. And if you if you're coming down, can you bring your own mess kit, plate, bowl, silverware, and a cup of some form, because we're having a hard time with keeping our dishes going and not having breaking issues with dishes and all that. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
For KBOO News, this is Joe Lino.
Tell us about this Right to Dream 2 campaign.
This Right to Dream 2 campaign came out of the group Right to Survive, where we've seen where people were studying, sleeping on the streets, and not enough shelter space for them to live. So a group of us formed Right to Dream 2, meaning that even houseless people have a right to sleep and dream. Everybody have a right to the American dream, so they have a right to dream too.
What are some of the problems that people face when sleeping out on the street?
They face being attacked, people with homeless phobia attacking them. They face the wet and cold weather from the rain. They face police sweeping down on them, moving them around constantly.
So tell us about this space. We're here on 4th and Burnside. Mm-hmm. And what is this space?
This space used to be an adult bookstore, and they tore that down because the city said it was causing problems. So then the landowners, gracious they may be, they put food carts on here, and then the city told them that they couldn't have food carts because it was gravel. So they said, well, what the heck? I'll do what I want to do. Maybe I give it to some homeless people and let them sleep on it and stuff. And since it's a no camping ban in the city, we just calling this a rest area where people could come get a good sleep, because some houseless people work during the nighttime and there's no shelter open in the day for them to sleep. So this is going to be a prime candidate for them to come sleep and for families to stay together. Due to foreclosure, you're having families being pushed out into the streets, and for families staying together, they can stay here with their family.
So the camping ban also applies to private property?
What they say in private property is that people can't camp on your land in a tent. That's what they say.
And if a homeowner has a yard and they want to have their kids camp out in the backyard, is that part of the camping ban?
Yes, it is.
Hello, this is Anna Preble on KBOO Radio, broadcasting from Occupy Portland Solidarity Camp here in downtown Portland. And I just wanted to give you a couple of quick announcements about what's happening here at 1 o'clock in case you are planning to head down here. 1 o'clock is actually a really good time to be here, even though it's only a few minutes away. There's a workshop going on that is based, it's focusing on reality-based economics for reality-based human beings. The purpose is to inspire folks, and it's to empower people to create a new economic management system for humanity and to get rid of money and finance. So that is actually a workshop that's happening at the Shrunk Plaza Amphitheater, which is at Southwest 3rd and Madison, and that's, again, today at 1 p.m. Also at 1 p.m. is Malik Rahim is speaking at the amphitheater. He is going to, from what I'm understanding, he's going to talk about the Black Panther Party, his experience with New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, I believe. And there's also Amanda Fritz is also going to be holding an open forum there at the amphitheater. And again, that's at 1 o'clock. So we're sitting here talking to Spo. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi. My name is Spo Gibbons. I'm a volunteer for KBOO, have been since the beginning of this year in January, and I'm here, and I've been on within the Occupy Portland camp since the day was a full day in the camp. I was not feeling well the day of when they were on the waterfront. However, I came down at 5 o'clock the next morning, and I walked all the way from the Burnside Bridge thinking they're along the waterfront, and I was like, where are they? Where are they? Oh, no, they went home! We're doomed! They went home! Shoot! But then, so I walked all the way up, sat down, had a cigarette, and said, hey, I need to use the restroom, and I know where the one and only restroom on this for public people on the streets of Portland is, and even though it doesn't have running water in the sink, and the toilet's flush. So I went over to that restroom, and lo and behold, there were tents in the park. And then I looked across the street to the elk, and the elk was still having water pass through him, coming out of his ears. And then the other side, lo and behold, there were more tents to the other side, and there was a tent of sorts where the coffee was. And I knew that I was home.
Oh, no. You went in search of water and found a foothold of tents with a coffee. Yeah, a coffee counter and baristas who actually serve you.
I became a volunteer in the kitchen right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And best friends with the manager of the kitchen. How does that work?
Oh, well, that's, actually a really good place to be. How is the kitchen running? It seems like it's got some...
Do you know, in the course of since the 7th of October, what's the date today?
Today's the 18th.
On the 18th. So we're talking however many days. I'm not good at math.
Today is, officially, it's day 13.
Okay.
According to the information tent, at least.
In the course...
it's going by too fast for me.
Shit, sorry. In the course of those days... Oh, man. See, I have to look at the tent to get an idea. In the course of those days, it's only coffee, and I'll lick it off in a minute.
Thank you.
I just knocked over some coffee onto all the KBOO flyers. I'm sorry. I'm just going to have to take all these bumper stickers. But it has become, it has become like from a campsite. We're going to throw the sterno up on the flattest surface we can find.
Mm-hmm.
To, hey, this is an outdoor amphitheater for like 10,000 people, and we're the caterers. It's amazing. I wanted to say thank you to each and every one, individual and business alike, that has donated money. No, I'm sorry, donated food. I don't know where that one word came from. It's wrong. They donated their food and their time to bring it to us. They've donated the hot water, the coffee. They've donated water. They've donated cooking kitchens so we could cook when we were not able to even cook or boil some water on site here. We have had just the most amazing outpouring of individual and local businesses. Let's just give and give and give to us because they're saying we're with you. We just can't be there at the moment, but we can help all those that are occupying Portland right now.
Well, there's been businesses that have donated their kitchens to the space to cook for the camp occupants here.
There have. Now, I don't have a list of names, but all I know is that there's this one particular kitchen that I'm referring to. The gentleman came to me on the second day and said, hey, do you guys need any help with cooking? We had, by that time, on the second day, like piles and piles of rice and of pasta. And of all things, you need boiling water.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a stove of some sort to cook. Mm-hmm. So we had all this stuff we could cook, but we weren't able to because there was some no open flame law or something like that. So a gentleman actually who is in the food industry and shares a house with two other people in the food industry. They make some sort of thing you'll find at New Seasons or at Whole Foods Market in the organic specialty bakery. He's a baker himself. They offered their home kitchen, which is a big, huge, professional kitchen, for us to cook, for them to cook and then bring back to us here on the front lines.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's just been wonderful.
The time that they spend to do that.
I would also like to thank our mayor. And the city of Portland for being so open to talking about what's going on and what we need and how we can make this all work together.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also like to thank the Portland Police Department because they've been amazingly open and also just like the mayor, willing to talk about what we need so we can just get along and make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want any conflict. There may be, there are people that believe that this revolution means that you have to have fighting and that you have to have, you know, people shooting guns or throwing Molotov cocktails. Not gin and tonics, but Molotov cocktails, okay? You know, please don't waste the GTs.
Yeah.
Okay. But the Portland Police Department has been superb in coming through. And if we had some concerns, we had our liaison talk to them. And there's been a number of things. On the very first night, they had some vandalism to their cars and to their building. And they let us know via by way of our liaison that there's one thing we have to make perfectly clear, that it's not acceptable to vandalize anything in Portland, especially the police department, when they're trying to do their best to help us out, to protect us, and to protect us because, you know, even though it seems like, you know, we're the only ones that feel this way and believe this way because we are the 99%, there's a minuscule percent inside that 99%, which may perhaps the non-believing free radicals that would like to not see our success for our movement. So we do need the Portland police to protect us as well, you know, and what better way for our officers that are set to serve and protect
the people? Serve the people, isn't that?
Well, wait a minute, isn't that the motto of almost every police department to serve and protect?
Yeah,
not to command and corral, not to make fearful any time I pass by in my car, not to send off sirens every minute of every hour of every day. Them and the ambulances that there's one now.
Yeah. Speak of the devil.
3 o'clock in 3 o'clock in the morning, there's not one single car on the street, yet that ambulance is blasting, going, I love my job. I can blast this siren. I always wanted to when I was a kid, and now I can. 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm blasting.
Well, these days you gotta be glad you have a job, so
sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I got carried away.
Well, it was the magic of the moment. I mean, how often do you talk about a siren and then it happens?
For a minute there, I lost myself in my headphones, so I thought that maybe Tom was censoring me. Tom turned my volume down so no one could hear me. And I think you didn't hear those other things that I said. Yeah, but really, no, I am totally grateful because it's been such an amazingly wonderful experience for me to be here. Mm-hmm. I have never been at a sit-in. I have been in one march when that was the rally to house the economy, war economy treating you. I was a peacekeeper at that, and I was so moved by all of that and so thrilled to be a part of it as a peacekeeper because I had a little green badge and it said peacekeeper on both sides.
Oh.
It was just a piece of paper in a piece of plastic, but it made me feel special.
Yeah.
You know, because I wanted to keep the peace because the peace is something that needs to be kept.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the thing is about peace.
Oh, there's a lot of things that come to mind when I think of peace.
Well, peacemaker is the only real position in peace.
Mm-hmm.
Peacekeeper, you can't keep a peace.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Peace negotiator, you should not and cannot negotiate peace. It either is or it isn't. The essence of peace cannot be held by a gun. Peace cannot be brought about by saying, if you do this, I'll do this. There is no compromise in peace. Peace just is because peace is love. And love knows what love needs to do every hour of every day of every minute. Wait a minute. Did I already say minute?
No, that was perfect.
Every minute, every hour of every day.
Yeah.
Love knows what peace is, and peace and love live together in harmony.
Well put.
Yeah. I think they sing down at the corner cafe sometimes. Yeah.
Imperfect.
Open mic. Yeah. Open mic night most times.
Yeah. That's when you don't need alcohol for it to sound good, right?
Well, I don't.
The open mic cuddle care.
I don't, but a little caffeine goes a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I'm the coffee man.
So it's a good spot to be. In a place where coffee is free for the.
Yeah. But I wanted to just be open. And I would also like to thank Kabu, Tommy Hollywood, Tom Hood, for making this happen day in, day out here and coming down.
He's working hard.
And putting those little flyers out that say Kabu is in total support with Occupation Portland. It's like, you know, it's like, where is it here? Where is it? It says.
Well, I definitely wanted to be present at the at the camp to, you know, bring it to the airwaves if possible. So
we are getting presents every day. It's like I walk around and go, it's like Christmas every day.
Nice, yeah.
And that was even before I came down here, so I don't know what's going on with that. But at the same time, I'm amazed every day at all the gifts that I receive.
Well, this definitely feels like Christmas here.
It is. It's it's an amazingly wonderful thing. And if everyone could experience this for just a day, they would want to experience it more than one day. See, that's the thing about what's going on here. It's just that we're realizing that we as a people, we need to come together and share the good things and focus on the good things and know that we can work out any problem that is before us. Mm-hmm. We just need to set aside our anger, set aside our I'm better than you. You flip the burgers and I clean the toilets, therefore you're better than me. No.
Yeah.
No. No. No, I'll flip the burgers and be just as good as you.
Yeah, I mean, that is one thing. That is one thing that's easy to see here is that there's a lot of horizontal. There's a lot of organization, but it's all horizontal and not vertical with the hierarchy. It's all about equality and people sharing the workload and just sharing the love as well as the workload.
The Volunteers of America are stepping up and stepping forward and stepping in and saying, yes, we can. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't, no, let's scratch that. Because I heard that once before. Yeah. I'm saying something else.
Yeah.
Hell yes, or we will, instead of we won't go. Hell yes, we will. Okay, no, that's still not good. But they're just saying, we know we can do it. They're saying, we want to help make this world a better place. That's what they're saying. And we also want, if there's any spare food after we're done cooking it and making it and serving it and doing the dishes, that would be swell too.
Yeah, let nobody be hungry.
And that's the amazing thing. I have never eaten so well than when I've been in this camp. There's the most amazing. I would like to thank the kitchen. Between Patrick and Elmira, they have steered that kitchen ship so amazingly well.
Yeah.
My two friends.
Yeah.
How is that? I don't know, but it just happened. And they're really nice people, too.
Yeah, they are.
And Elmira.
Even when I brought a little cup to try and strategically place the pasta, nobody complained. They were just like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
That's quite a bullseye, but let's make that happen.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll have to think about that. Next time I'll bring a bowl.
Yeah. In conjunction with all the amazing, wonderful donors that have been so generous with anything. And it's not even, organizations that we're talking about. Single people walk up and say, I've got 5 loaves of bread and 2 gallons of water. Can you use it?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of stuff.
Yeah, amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just really incredible. I had one guy show up. Oh, that brings me to another subject altogether, which is, I have had an opportunity of a lifetime being here, and that is by fulfilling an idea dream that I didn't know I had until it happened.
Really?
On the 10th of October at 2 p.m., I got the idea that all the people down at the street that are playing musical instruments, people around are playing musical instruments, they have musical instruments, but there's so many more that don't, because I had this one guy go, is this your drum? Can I borrow it? I go, well, it's not my drum, but I'd say you could borrow it, but it's not mine, so maybe not, but check back later, and I'll ask the guy if it's okay if you borrow it. And then I said, hey, what if we had a musical instrument sharing show?
That would be awesome.
Where people would donate their musical instruments to me, us, and then we would let anybody come and pick out an instrument that on the shelf and sign it out for 24 hours. And so I went
and
over.
And make some music for people, huh?
Yeah. I went over to the information department and talked to Ethan, and he goes, find a name for your shop, pick out a location, and make a sign, and we're going to be over there in 5 minutes.
Wow. So that was happening now? Are you calling out for people to help make this music happen by bringing in their instruments?
Well, right there is a recorder of high quality.
It says, it's a very nice recorder.
What kind is that? I can't get my glasses.
Angel.
It says it's an angel. Well, an angel was given to me. As my very first donation.
That's a great idea.
To my musical instrument sharing supply.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know it's an acronym that I made up, the name? I didn't tell you the name of my shop.
Yeah, what is the name of your
shop? It's called Peace on Earth Music Supply.
Peace on Earth Music Supply.
And that's where the acronym...
Poems, nice.
It's poems.
That's very lovely.
And you know why? Because music instruments, and that from the Peace on Earth Music Supply?
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone deserves to have instruments of peace available to them.
Oh, that's a really great idea. I'm glad that it's happening.
Yeah!
So
I got my own recorder.
So just if anybody's listening, where would you tell them to bring their instruments?
You can bring them to me at the Peace on Earth Music Supply shop. I'm often around, and if not, just ask anyone where Spo is, and they'll call my name out, mm-hmm. or they'll press the secret button, and I'll be there. You know,
maybe the kitchen could be a good place to find you.
Okay, maybe not secret button. How about flash the sign in the sky? Yeah. Okay, or actually go to the information desk.
That's a good place to start.
And you could actually leave the donation at the information booth, because they're my friends, and they have more storage room than I do. So, but yeah, that would be wonderful. You don't even have to donate it. You can loan it to us, and we'll get all the stuff worked out is what your name is, what your phone number is, and all that stuff. But email or whatever. But you can loan it to us. And after all this is done, I don't think it's ever going to be done. But when we move to a different location with the store, the shop, who knows? We might have more than one location where there would be a piece on Earth Music Supply. But I have to tell you, and please, between you and me, Anna, right? Mm-hmm. Can you keep this a secret?
I'll do my best.
Okay. Because this is, it's really, the Peace on Earth Music Supply is really a storefront for the secret organization, the Peace on Earth Music Society.
Oh, no.
Okay? Don't tell anyone.
The secret society. Yeah, so, Tom.
You can, Peace on Earth Music Society, okay?
Yeah, okay.
It's a storefront. It's clandestine.
So if anybody's got, like, the old clarinet or the old trumpet that their kid used to take to music lessons or have in high school band that they don't, that's just sitting up in the attic or something like that, you know?
Toy instruments.
Toy instruments.
We love
anything
toy
that's a music maker, right?
Broken instruments we can fix.
Yeah.
My buddy Patrick.
That's amazing.
The manager. A friend of mine gave me a guitar neck with the tuning pegs, but no body.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was like...
You can improvise a body for that.
So he actually walked up and had this flat box that was half the size of a Bo Diddley guitar.
Wow.
In the same shape.
Perfect.
And we put it up to the base of the other one. I said, yeah, we just cut a hole in the base of it, connected, and then put some strings and a bridge on it. And I went, but we can't call it a Bo Diddley guitar. It's going to be a Spo Diddley guitar.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
so that's a good, note to end on there.
I'm leaving now.
Okay. Thanks so much for talking to us,
You're welcome. Thanks, Anna. Thanks,
Tom. Good to meet you.
Thanks, Tom, for having me on. Hey, love you, everybody. We're going to make it. Come down. Have coffee. Come down. Have a meal. No charge for the meals, really. If you're hungry, come down.
Yeah. Thank you.